Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Blog Talk Radio, our show, Phenomenally Yours, broadcast weekly on Thursday evenings from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. This evening, I thought we would talk about a little bit about overcoming obstacles. How many times have you heard the phrase, and it came to pass? It doesn't say it came to stay. Life is about obstacles, and your ability to overcome those challenges will ultimately determine the quality of your life. Turn relatively simple things into difficult ones. The road to success is paved with many obstacles, but in order to be successful, you must have flexibility and tenacity to overcome them. It really doesn't matter what endeavor you're pursuing, there will be problems, issues, and roadblocks along the way. If you accept this as being reality and not being negative, you can prepare yourself by getting ready to handle it quickly and decisively. Obstacles require you to change, and that is something that we as humans struggle with and resist. Today, our guest is Carly A. Thorne, who is a speaker, author, business consultant, producer, and director. Welcome, Carly, to our show. We're so pleased that you could join us today. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. How
so
are you
happy
today?
To be here. I'm wonderful.
Great.
Very happy to be here.
So Carly is a speaker, an author, a business consultant, producer, and a director. She's all about link locally, connect globally, conscious business collaboration, social we media, and we leadership. Born in 1964, Carly has spent the last 25-plus years mapping out a detailed blueprint from years of sculpting, integrating, refining, and continually educating herself in and working in the areas of the multi-sensory, psychology, theology, philosophy, communications, business, multimedia, and the entertainment industry. Carly immersed herself in self-improvement seminars and home study courses, and then applying them first on herself and then with clients based on some of the teachings she learned from other people she considers mentors. Carly lives her life to empower, motivate, inspire, and educate others. Carly is passionate about conscious business collaborations of the mind, body, business, and spirit, as it is all interconnected. Beginning her career in the early 90s, working with small businesses, executive speakers, and entertainment business, Carly spends her time doing what she is passionate about, and that is consulting with clients on time and organizational management, self-development, and business development. She is also still actively interviewing authors, speakers, and businesses, as she loves doing that and loves to learn from others. Carly is an avid writer, author, speaker, producer, director, and a nature photographer. Because Carly grew up severely sexually, verbally, and physically abused, and numerous health challenges, she's had to endure 30-plus surgeries to date, and therefore she lives by these mantras: never give up, live with no regrets, be yourself, be authentic, empower, motivate, inspire, and teach others. Forget the words try, what-ofs, could-ofs, should-ofs, what-ifs, and buts. All feedback is good feedback. So again, Carly, we welcome you to our show. So tell our listeners a little bit about where your journey began.
Well, first of all, thank you for reading all that, except I gave that you as a guideline. I always laugh, you know, people say, well, give me your bio. So I give them two different bios, and I say, pick out what you want. In other words, what resonates for you, for your audience. And then I get on the line with people and they read the whole thing. I'm like, no. Anyway, excuse me. But thank you for that. And so, you know, my journey began, you know, from those challenges. I would say that a lot of people in coaching will say, you know, do not focus on that. And there's two caveats to that. Yes, do not focus on your past. And I would say don't forget where you came from for two things. Because when you're doing such interviews as this, you never know who's on the other side of these interviews. And I have to say that you never know who's listening. And because of you never know who's listening, everyone resonates with a different speaker or a different author. And when you're reading a book, everyone takes away something different. So the same thing with the listener. Everyone's had something different happen to them, and we're all different. We're audio kinesthetic. We're audio digital, meaning that we are more analytical. And so the listeners all take away something different. And so when we're sharing our story, someone may take something differently from that, and sharing our stories and doing that, we can help people in ways we never know we could possibly help someone. And I get phone calls, inboxes, emails, letters saying, oh, my God, thank you so much. I never knew X, you know, happened, and now I have the courage to do X. So, yes, don't focus on the bad. I say look at it as whatever happened to you, whatever that is. It doesn't have to be sexual, verbal, physical abuse. It could be whatever it is that happened to you. And because of that, it made you stronger. It made you more empowered. It made you be more get out of your comfort zone. Whatever that is for you, it gets you to be able to help people in a way that you never know you could. And so that's why my clients know. I mean, it's not like you go out and tell everyone every nitty-gritty detail, right? That's not what you do. It's just that telling people that you have had 35 surgeries and that you're still standing and that you're still working or whatever that is, right? It just tells people that you are a courageous person or that you never give up and that you stand up for yourself or that you choose to empower people because of your story. So that's what I mean. Does that make sense?
It does, and I totally agree with you. I think if we're going to be about the business of helping and empowering other people, I think we have to have a certain level of transparency. And by that I mean we have to share a little bit about the trials, the tribulations, the journey that we have endured and that we have overcome. And that's the operative word. Whatever it is that we have gone through it and we've come out on the other side and we've come out a little bit better than what we were because now we're able to reach back and help someone. And so I agree with you because a lot of times I too will have women come up to me after hearing my testimony and they'll say, you know, I've been holding this in for 30 years. I've never had the courage to speak on it. And so they've been suffering in silence for all that time. So I totally agree with you that, you know, sometimes you got to have that level of transparency. But how have you been able to overcome the challenges that you have faced in your life, your physical challenges, the abuse that you suffered? How have you been able to overcome some of those challenges?
Well, that's a very good question. And one is teaching people that you, A, have to speak out, and, two, have the courage to get help. When I was younger, I was extremely angry, and I was the lone rock. I can do it all myself. Screw you. No one, you know, I'm not, you can't help me, and no one can help me. And before, when I did ask for help, everyone thought I was a liar. And then I remember when growing up younger, if you did ask for help, you got in more trouble. So when
right.
I did go ask for help when I was really young in the schools, I would tell the nuns this is what was going on, and they'd go home and tell my parents. And then, of course, it's like, how dare you say anything? How dare you embarrass us like that? And I get in more trouble. So as I got older, it was like, A, I'm not telling anybody because I'm going to get in more trouble. And then, of course, and if I tell my clients, I'm not going to get any clients because who wants to work with someone who's, you know, got X, Y, and Z? And then, you know, I finally got to the point where, well, and here's the analogy, though, too, that I use all the time. if you're trying to get help for whatever it is, overeating or abuse, would you go to a counselor who's never been abused to get help for abuse?
That's right.
It's kind of like, it's kind of stupid. It's like, how can they understand or even empath overeating if they don't have, if they have no knowledge of what it feels like to not be able to eat a piece of cake, because if you eat that piece of cake, you're not going to stop. It's like, you never give an alcoholic a drink. Why? Because you know to give the alcoholic a drink, they can't stop. However, most of society does not understand what it's like if you have that obsession with overeating, because if you have that one, it's like it's your birthday. Oh, it's okay. Have a piece of cake. Just one piece of cake. It's not going to cause you any harm.
Yeah.
You know, it's moronic. They understand alcoholism. They have no idea what it's like to have anything to do with anorexia or bulimia or that overeating, you know, with the sugar or that piece of cake, right? So I finally understood that if I can't, if I don't, you know, reaching out to clients or working with clients, if you don't get that help for yourself, if you don't have a mentor or if you don't reach out for help, if you don't get that counselor. So I finally went to a church one day and found a group of, you know, most of the help is in churches, whether, and that's why I tell clients too. And most people have issues with churches because a lot of abuse happened in churches. And so I finally started reaching out to people and telling them, you know what? You don't have to like a church. You don't have to be Catholic. You don't have to be any religion, anything. You can be spiritual and not be religious. However, most really good self-help groups happen to be run out of churches because churches give free space. So it's like, be willing to go to a church to get help. Take the religion out of it and realize there's a lot of amazing self-help groups that are run out of churches. And they're not necessarily religious. You know, in other words, the groups that are in there aren't religious. It just happens you run out of there because there's free space. And that's how I actually got help. My initial help was out of a woman's, you know, group that happened to run out of a church, which literally did save me. And that was my beginning. And then, you know, eventually I got real help through some counseling, and then I found some, you know, started going to a lot of self-help group, like self-development courses, and got neurolinguistic and body language, and I started studying, you know, theology and philosophy and psychology and all the, and went to college and got some, you know, other studies, and, you know, I really studied herbology and tons of all those other things, nutrition and just, you know, literally both sides, Western medicine and Eastern medicines, and is that all the surgeries. I wanted to know what they were doing in my body. I wanted to know how I could complement, not a struggle for me. I was like, why can't I do this myself? Why do I need Western medicine? Why can't I just use Eastern? And then I really learned there's a place for both. There's some Western things that are really necessary, and there's some things I can complement with Eastern, right? So it's a balance of both. And I really walk a fine line between the two. I love Eastern methodologies and the different energy medicines that are out there and the different herbs and flower essences and all the different energy medicines and there's so much out there. I mean, I could go on forever. Just, you know what I'm saying? There's so much out there. And there is a place for Western medicine, and not just talking like medicine. I'm talking about like, you know, there's a place for surgery sometimes, and there is a place for some Western medicine for people that are severely depressed, that there's, you know, they have a real chemical imbalance. And I'm going to put a disclaimer here. I'm not telling anyone to go out there and take Western meds or Eastern. I'm not a doctor. If anyone's severely depressed or needs help or suicidal, go seek a real doctor. I'm not telling anyone anything. I'm just saying this is my personal belief. You do what you need to do and you go seek a doctor. I'm not a doctor. I'm just sharing my experiences. And I had to be really strong about that. I had to put my own ego aside. It was really hard for me to accept that there were certain things I had to do that I didn't want to do. And when I would not do them, it would cause my body a lot of harm. So,
yeah, it's
one of those things I really had to accept.
You know, and you mentioned the about Western and Eastern medicine, and I too have concerns with that because so many of my friends are taking so much medication that the medication that they're using to solve one problem is creating other problems, and then they get prescribed medication for those side effects. And so, you know, there's got to be a better way. I went to the doctor several months ago, and the doctor said that I was pre-diabetic. And so they wanted to write a prescription, and I was like, no, I don't want a prescription. There ought to be a way for me to be able to prevent the onset of this without having to take prescriptive medication. And so I have a colleague who is a medical doctor and left traditional medicine to become a holistic, to go into holistic treatments. So I called her to find out what could I take instead of taking a prescriptive medication to, you know, to help with the prevent the onset of this. And so she told me what to take. So I agree with you that there is a place for both. And so how do you then blend the teachings and the principles of Eastern and Western medicine in your life and in your ministry and in your ability to be able to work with and help your clients? How do you blend those teachings and principles?
Okay, well, this is like an interview all in itself. So here it's like how far in the rabbit hole you want to go. Because here's the problem with our government. This is a governmental issue, too. You got to understand, holistic medicine is very expensive, and a lot of people can't afford it, unfortunately. To treat, like, you know, pre-diabetes and all these things, yes, you can do it without Western medicine. It's food, right? Exercise, it's all those things. Some of it is hereditary. There's people that have high cholesterol, whether they like it or not, and can eat all the organic foods and eat all the, you know, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying a disclaimer because there's so much down the rabbit hole that we could go on this. And unfortunately, a lot of people can't afford all the supplements, right? So, unfortunately, the government's put us in a very precarious situation. A lot of the holistic medications or, like, holistic doctors or naturopaths, some of the naturopaths charge $200 to see them, you know, because it's none of it's covered by insurance. And then you talk about all the supplements or herbs that one would need to, you know, some that we prescribe. You could be running, you know, $200 a month just on supplements alone. So you see, that's what I'm saying. It's a really precarious situation. So that's what I'm saying. If someone has the money, I am all for someone eating all organic foods, doing all the natural supplements and all that stuff. And I know a lot of people that can't afford that. So it's a balance of them eating, you know, the least pesticide foods that there are that are not organic and wash them really well in water and a diluted vinegar solution and or getting grapefruit seed oil and dilute that in water because grapefruit seed oil kills a lot of the pesticide and just diluting it in water and doing that solution. And there's a list of the most 10 dirty, it's called a dirty list of the foods that have the most pesticides because any fruit or vegetable that's grown most to the ground are going to have the most highest pesticides. So those are the ones that you want to stay away from. And if you Google any, it's called the Dirty Dozen, and it'll tell you those are the most, you know, ones that have the most high pesticides. So, you know, what I'm saying, it's a hard kind of line there. So people that don't have a lot of money, I encourage them to, like, stay away from the Dirty Dozen or, like, to get great seed oil and really wash them really well and really, you know, find you can go online and really look at nutrition, study nutrition, and of course there's a lot of stuff that's free online on YouTube, and really look to really eat really well. Stay away from refined sugars, you know, all the white flours, stay away from all that, white pasta and all that stuff, and eat more, you know, which is common sense, which just could be really hard for a lot of people because, again, it's much cheaper to eat all the carb stuff. And it costs more to eat fresh vegetables and fruits, unfortunately, and to eat whole grains and the brown stuff. So, you know, quinoa and brown rice and, you know, buckwheat and all that stuff. So, you know, you do counsel people, and then it comes down to, unfortunately, economics. And I try not I try and work with people of all economics, not just the high-end CEOs and people that have a ton of money. I reach out to all levels of economics, not just one. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like, how far down the rabbit hole do you want to go? It's like, you know, a day-long seminar.
So tell us this. So how did this become your passion?
Well, it's my passion only because I've been all levels of economics. I grew up in a very wealthy family, and I kind of pushed away from that family because of all the stuff that was going on with the family. So I've been very wealthy. I've made six figures on my own, and then, you know, every time I've had to have a surgery, those six figures would go away only because, you know, there were times like when I had all my joints replaced, I was working behind my computer for 2 years. I couldn't really get out, be out in the world again. And then I would be making less than six figures. So I've been in the six-figure world, and I've been in the less-than-figure world. So I've actually experienced all levels of economics. So I know what it's like to struggle. I know what it's like not to struggle. I know what it's like to have servants. I know what it's like not to have servants. So I've lived all those levels of life. So that is kind of why, you know, kind of one of my passions is to reach out to all of economics. I've actually lived a barter life. I pushed myself out there to live all different types of lives to experience that. I've lived in Hawaii. I live in the middle of the jungle of Hawaii. Because I've lived in barters, and I've lived in mansions, and I've lived like in the middle of the jungle and a screened in octagon. So I know what it's like to live off the land. I know what it's like to live with servants and bodyguards in the middle of South America, because that's the way I kind of grew up. To me, having all the money in the world doesn't equate happiness, and having all the money in the world it boils down to, if you could have all the money in the world, make sure that you create happiness in a way where you have a family unit that is harmonious and willing to collaborate. That's why I'm so much about collaboration, because to me, family is about, the one thing I loved about South America is the family unit. South Americans love to create family and unity, and, you know, they'll live all together in one house. And so a lot of times when my family would be traveling, I'd be hanging out with the servants and their families, and I love that. So to me, that's kind of one of the reasons why I love collaboration and family, and I tend to, even as an adult, I love being with others. I tend to be much more of a hermit when I'm by myself, and I tend to love family and togetherness and collaboration. And when I've owned my own places, I've tended to create that by renting out rooms to like kids that are going to college, and I become kind of like the surrogate mom and cook and do laundry and kind of like create that unity for them when they're away from their families. When I was younger, that's what I would do. I'd buy big houses and rent out rooms. For people that were, you know, going to college. So I think you can have a ton of money and create unity and connections and all that. And so that's why I like working with all demographics and helping them create that unity and that connection, still keep that connection within their families. And so I tend to work with all levels because of that. I like to see that diversity. I'm the type of person who needs diversity. I could never do a typical 9-to-5 job. I would go out of my mind. I like, and that's why I kind of do a lot of things. I love doing nature photography. I love, you know, if you notice, all my books are collaborative writing. It's not me writing one book. I'll write a chapter in a book with others. I like collaboration. That's kind of my life. You know, I'll produce a scene.
With so many facets of your life, then how do you balance everything and still manage to stay grounded? You got a lot. You just have a lot of facets. How do you manage to stay grounded and balance everything?
Well, I pick and choose my battles. I pick and choose my projects. So let's say like I was just in a movie, or just associated produce a movie. I do that, and then I percentage out things. I keep a certain amount of steady clients, and then the rest of my free time that I keep, I allocate that for other projects. So, like, after we're done with this interview, I'm going on set to do a scene in a movie. And then this weekend I'm working on a 3-day organizational project for a client. So So I allocate my time, you know, the way I want to. That's kind of the beauty of being a self-employed, you know, person. So I kind of pick and choose. I allocate so much time for so many things. And then I have another book coming out, a chapter I wrote in another book in June, and I'm also being in a summit in June. So I tend to get chosen a lot for telesummits, and I get chosen a lot for interviews. And then I at least attempt to be in a book every 6 months or every year where I write a chapter in a book. So I allocate my time that way. So I get to do things I love, right? So I keep a couple, I keep, you know, two or three steady clients that I love, that brings in the money that, you know, I need to do what I need to do, right? And then it gives me enough stability and free time to pick my passion projects.
So how do you think your childhood played a role in who you have become as a woman and as a professional?
Well, because we traveled so much and because of where I grew up, I had to be very adaptable because I was always a new kid. It gave me this sense of adventure, freedom, and literally – I don't like the word survivor, so I choose words like, thriver. I choose words like, instead of victim, I choose words like, like warrior. So I am. I'm an adventurer. I'm a warrior. I'm a thriver. And I call myself a chameleon. I'm a chameleon. I ebb and flow into any environment and can just do things. I'm just like that. And I don't. And it, because of all those challenges, it's made me be someone that's very independent and that I can just be thrown into a situation and be able to handle it. So, I think people have been through a lot of things. If you take the strength out of it, and if you look at it that way, you have the ability to do those things. You have the ability to adapt to any given situation. You have the ability to kind of be the chameleon where you can kind of just turn into different things. I mean, it's kind of like being an actress or an actor, right? You have to turn into these different characters and perform. Now, when I say perform, it doesn't mean perform and not be who you are. It means take the experiences and channel that into that character and bring out those pieces of you. And so there's a lot of advantages to having been through different things. And the forgiveness pieces are very important because it allows you to channel the different emotions and really enrich, compassion and passion. And, it's really interesting. Those dark places really channels places where you get to really dig deep about forgiveness and compassion for others. So there's as much as those things might have been horrendous, there's also pieces that can be really powerful for the more positive emotions.
And you mentioned those dark places. You know, we all have those dark places that we have gone through at some point in our lives. But it's like you said, what do we learn while we're in those dark places so that we're able to adapt and be able to move on and to be able to kind of learn from those. So in your case, what life lessons have you learned from your journey and how have you been able to apply those lessons to not only your life, but to be able to help and inspire your clients?
I think the most profound ones is forgiveness for others and learning to love myself mostly. I mean, you know how it is. We tend to loathe ourselves and hate ourselves for the things that have happened to us. We tend to have a lot of self-hatred towards ourselves, body images, just a lot of interesting things that happen to ourselves. So it's learning to forgive ourselves, love ourselves, and truly forgive others and not be so hypercritical of ourselves. So for me, it was mostly being really super hard on myself and being the perfectionist. And so that was a huge one. And teaching other people that you don't have to be perfect. And it's okay to fail. It's okay not to be perfect. And that you're, I don't know if you've seen some of my hashtags, but one of them is BLAW, B-L-A-W. and that's a huge hashtag for me that I did a whole photo shoot on, I did a little book on, and it's about, you know, whenever you're feeling blah, remember that you're beautiful, loved, appreciated, and worthy.
Yeah.
You know, it's huge. When you're feeling blah, remember that you're beautiful, loved, appreciated, and worthy. Because how many times you feel blah, you know? And it's like, it's such an acronym to think that, you know, that you're beautiful, loved, appreciated, worthy. And how many times do you actually say that to yourself? So I did a little kind of cool meme that says, you know, you are, and make sure you tell others that they are. So there's one person that says you are, another person says they are. And it's just like, you know, it's an affirmation for people to say every day that, you know, you are beautiful, loved, appreciated, and worthy. And to tell them, to go around telling other people, hey, you know what? Hey, you are. And it's just, you know, that constant affirmation that when you're in that space, to tell yourself that you are. So it's a really powerful meme, and it's a powerful affirmation. So it's stuff like that. It's just stuff to remember that when we're born, that's what we are. When we're born, that's all we are, is love. You know, we're just
that's
these little perfect little beings that don't know anything different. We don't know anything but love. We don't know anything other than that. We're just these beautiful little beings that were beautiful, that were loved, and that were appreciated, and that were worthy of all that.
Yeah, but somewhere along the way, particularly we as women, we lose that image of ourselves. And you're right, sometimes we can have such a low self-image that we beat ourselves up, so that when we do have those blah moments turn into blah minutes, and then they come into hours, and it becomes a day, to your entire life becomes one blah. And you're absolutely right. We allow situations and circumstances to shape and mold our opinion of ourselves. So in your situation, how have your physical challenges that you've endured, how do you think that affected your self-esteem as a young woman? And then how do you help women who are dealing with some of those same issues in terms of their body image?
Well, a lot. I mean, look at our country. We have a plethora of anorexia, bulimia, overeaters. I grew up like that. I grew up with anorexia, bulimia, and, you know, back and forth. And then as an adult, that turned into overeaters. But the funny part is that overeating was like, I was anorexic and bulimic, and I stopped the bulimia when I was in my 30s. And then as I had to be an adult, I was 200 pounds like three times, but that was because of surgeries too, because what happened was if I got surgeries and I couldn't exercise, but you can understand I was a fitness model too. So there was that compulsion of, you know, exercising so I was completely fit, you know, and I had a nutrition background as personal trainer. So I could have chocolate all over my hands. I could serve you chocolate and not touch it. I mean, that's how compulsive, like how driven from the anorexic part that I was never, you know, like I stopped anorexia when I was in my, you know, like, you know, I don't know, my 20s. And then I stopped the bulimia when I was in my 30s. I stopped throwing up. But still, I still have that OA. And most people think OA is just like overeating like on candy and stuff. It's not. It could be like overeating on salad or nutrition bars, right? And it can be cake. It doesn't necessarily have to be cake, but it could just be sugar. And the sugar could be in the form of, like, health food. That's the funny part. So, but then when I had the surgeries, those signals would kick in. And the funny part is it could be something as neurotic as, like, even if you're eating healthy food, unless you ate five health bars, hiding those wrappers because you're afraid people might find that you had five healthy, you know, bars, hiding the wrappers. I mean, look at that, you know, societal, you know, thing that we have in our society. And so now, but even when I lost all the weight myself, I didn't get a personal trainer. I didn't, you know, have someone like, you know, laparoscopy or, you know, I never had any surgical procedures, any of that. And every time I had surgery and I had cuts where they, I had hip-to-hip cesarean cuts from all the endometriosis stuff, I still had a six-pack back. Now, the last four surgeries I have, which was they replaced all my joints, And I was behind the computer all that time. I also ballooned to 180. I got all that weight off. And then right now, I just had a whole other medical thing happen, and I already got all the weight down. I probably gained like 15 because something's going on with my thyroid or something like that. And now I'm in a state of like, okay, I need to, you know, release the weight. But, you know, it's amazing we have this society of people with their food issues. I mean, look at what's going on in our society, right?
Yeah.
So,
I see a large man, and then I see a large woman next to him, and then coming behind him are large children. We have just gotten to a point where I don't know if we just don't care. It's become socially acceptable to be overweight, and so we don't care about that anymore. I don't know what it is, but we have certainly become a society of overeaters, whatever it is that looks like, whether it's cake, chocolate, fried chicken, whatever it is, we have certainly become a society of overeaters. And so what has been your biggest accomplishment so far in your life?
I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things I look at it as, I would say my biggest accomplishment would be my clients. I've never been one for accolades for myself. I just find like that is, I always look at it as people. I mean, I got awarded a certificate from the city of LA last year. I donate my time to a charity every year where I produce and direct a senior event where we bring a bunch of entertainers, musicians, and volunteer singers, and we go to 3 nursing homes every year. And it's Christmas time, and we, you know, do all that stuff. Anyway, I got a certificate for event producing. The point is, it's like, you know what? You know, it's like accolades, right? But for me, it's like literally, to me, it's all about the people. It's, you know, for me, it's like what, right? So I would think that it's more about the people. That's what I look at it as.
So with everything that you've got going on in your life right about now, what's next for you? What's your vision of where you're going?
That's a very interesting question, because right now I've been really kind of thinking about that lately. I'm not real sure. I really miss working with kids. So I've been kind of puzzling with that. I'm actually thinking of taking some time to, I'm still going to be doing a lot of writing. I'm still really working on writing. I love writing. So I'm still going to be doing my writing. I'm still doing some of my social media consulting. And I'm still going to be doing minimal of that. That's kind of something I want to steer way more away from. And so I'm only probably going to be keeping, we're only probably going to be keeping one client for that. That's just because it's one big client. And then other than that, I'm going to keep doing my writing. But I think I'm doing a little bit of working with kids again. I really miss working with kids. Because I used to run a center. So maybe we're thinking about doing a program for kids. And then I might be doing a certification for conscious business that I've been asked to do, which will be talking about, conscious business collaborations, but within that we'll be talking about color marketing and all that multi-sensory stuff that I do. So I'm thinking about doing a certification for that. So I don't know. There's just a lot going on right now.
So you mentioned multi-sensory stuff. Tell us a little bit, share a little bit with our audience about that. What is that all about, multi-sensory self? What is that?
So multi-sensory is, you got to remember that we're individuals with different archetypes, and within that, we all hear differently, see differently, et cetera. So some people are kinesthetic, which means they're very touchy-feely. They're more slow in nature. Some people are auditory, so they learn by listening better. Some people are what we call audio-digital. So that's an interesting one where they hear something, then there's kind of like this delay where they actually go to different places of the brain to retrieve information, and then they come back to you, and then they'll answer. And then I'm missing one, audio, visual, kinesthetic, and I'm missing one. I'm blank right now. But anyways, there's different archetypes. And then within that, there's a whole other archetype where we take in feng shui and color. All colors mean different things. They bring in different energies. For example, you see a lot of squeeze pages that use the color red. And red usually isn't a great thing to use because most people, when they see red, they think of danger unconsciously, and it usually makes people stop. And I don't want to really get into this. I'll be giving away a lot of secrets. However, it's literally there's a lot of unconscious things that's happening when you're seeing different colors. We'll be teaching about the different colors and what happens unconsciously when we see them and all these different things and what colors to use for copy. And you're doing your squeeze pages and your websites and you're doing, your memes and all that stuff for marketing and you know, when you're doing stuff on Facebook and all that stuff.
So as much as you give to other people, Carly, how do you relax and refill your spirit after pouring into so many others?
Oh, I go to sleep every night to sound vibratory music. I put incense. I also use an aromatherapy mister. So, yeah, I love chilling to just, I very much love to just, I very get very relaxed and just get very chilled out by listening to music. Music is my very much relaxing factor. Sound vibratory music is my go-to place. And incense and just my aromatherapy is beautiful.
So as we wind down, what words of inspiration can you give to someone in our listening audience who might be trying to find their authentic self? What words of inspiration can you give to someone?
I would say never ever give up. There's always a way if you really want it. There really is. To realize that it is strength in getting help. It is not weakness. And just truly embody the blah. Beautiful, loved, appreciated, worthy. Whenever you're feeling blah, just say that to yourself over and over and over again. And believe it or not, please, thank you are words that so many people do not hear. And the more that you say them, the more that you will hear them. And we all love to hear them. So use them and say them as often as you can. It is such a boost to all of us. We just never get to hear them enough. And also the word love. We don't say that enough to people. I really love you. Thank you so much for doing that. And when we send emails, don't start off the emails with do this. Say, can you please do this? Or we need something done right away. Don't say do this as soon as possible. Start off emails with, I need this. Can you do this? It's like we need to use words please and thank you in all our emails. Seriously, people. And when we're talking to people, please, thank you, please, thank you. It's so important in our society. We do not use please and thank you enough. Those are the words I leave with.
So as we close, Carly, can you tell our listening audience how they might get in touch with you if someone listening wants to reach out to you? How might they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. So you can reach me at Carly, C-A-R-L-Y, A, Thorn, T-H-O-R-N-E, at gmail.com. That's the simplest way. Or just go to my website if you want to cruise around and see what's there. CarlyAlyssaThorn.com or CarlyAthorn.com will direct you there as well. So CarlyAlyssaThorne.com. You can also Google me and everything will come up. So Carly A. Thorn or CarlyAlyssaThorn.com, all over the internet. You'll find me anywhere. Facebook, Twitter, anywhere. I'm literally all over the internet. But yeah, if you just Google me, it'll bring up my website. But the most common is Carly Alyssa Thorne. So that's the easiest way. And people feel free to email me. No problem at all. And I return all my emails within 24 hours. And it's been wonderful being with you. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
We want to thank you, Carly, for sharing with us this evening. You have really given us just some words of encouragement and some words of inspiration. Be sure to join us every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time to hear from another phenomenal person. Or you can listen to our broadcast on blogtalkradio.com/discover a new beginning. If you would like to be a guest on the show or you know someone who is phenomenal, please contact me at linda@lindahwilliams.com. So I leave you with these words from that phenomenal woman, Maya Angelou. I walk into a room just as cool as you please, and to a man, the fellas stand or fall down on their knees. Then they swarm around me, a hive of honeybees. I say it's the fire in my eyes and the flash of my teeth, the swing in my waist and the joy in my feet. You see, I'm a woman, phenomenally, phenomenal woman. That's me. Thank you, Carly, for joining us this week, and we'll see you all here again next week. Good night.